The old saying, reach out and touch somebody, not physically, but reach out, whether it's a phone call, an email, a Zoom chat, whatever, reach out and communicate with your friends and neighbors. It's a matter of life or death.
Thank you. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Transpositive plays the first and third Tuesdays of every month during the queer programming block. And thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Have a great night, everyone.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Good night.
Support KBOO. Give to KBOO now. Help KBOO reach our fall fundraising goal of $80,000. Got some extra funds you can donate right now? Then go to KBOO.fm today and click on the donate button. Join the thousands of KBOO members who believe in volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio today.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Jacob Blake remains in hospital after being shot 9 times by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Donald Trump is scheduled to visit Kenosha today, September 1st, over objections of the state's governor. He says he will not be meeting with the Blake family, but will be meeting with law enforcement. Joe Biden has said he has spoken to the Blake family. And in Portland, Oregon, the killing of a far-right supporter on Saturday, August 29th, got this response from Donald Trump, a far-right supporter of Trump. Trump said, "Rest in peace, Jay." Trump tweeted support for the far-right group that organized in Portland, a Trump support caravan where people fired paintballs and pepper spray at protesters. He said they were great patriots. Trump has consistently refused to call to account violence by his supporters, but has said that Homeland Security will set up an office to investigate left-wing violent protesters. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, sheriffs killed a black man who was stopped by them while riding his bicycle. Is the nation headed for a race war, or is the nation already in a race war? Has Donald Trump, while stoking racist sentiments and division, managed to shift the focus away from police killings of black people to law and order? Our guests are Kenosha, Wisconsin-based the Reverend Dr. Monica L. Cummings of Bradford Community Unitarian Universalist Church and Portland, Oregon-based Mike Crenshaw, an educator, activist, and hip-hop artist. Also, we remember Chadwick Boseman, the actor whose death at 43 years old from colon cancer shocked his fans and those who worked with him. Best known for his character as King T'Challa in the worldwide blockbuster film Black Panther, Boseman kept his illness from the world all the while working while ill. His other notable roles included playing James Brown in Get On Up and Thurgood Marshall in Marshall. Our guest is Greg Tate, writer and cultural provocateur who has taught at Yale University, Columbia, Brown, Williams College, and Princeton. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. President Trump travels to Kenosha, Wisconsin today over the objections of the governor and Mayor John Antaramian.
I felt that the timing was wrong. We always have room for presidents to come to visit, candidates to come to visit. That's the process that you have, and it's something that we appreciate and have people do, but the timing on this we felt was not good, and so we did make the request for him to do it at a different time.
Trump will not visit the family of Jacob Blake, the 29-year-old father of six shot seven times in the back by a police officer. He remains hospitalized with severe injuries, facing multiple surgeries and the likelihood of permanent paralysis. And no plan for Trump to meet with the families of the two protesters shot dead, allegedly by a 17-year-old who had joined a self-styled militia which said it was protecting businesses from property damage. Trump will meet with law enforcement. Trump told Fox News yesterday he's a tremendous fan of law enforcement. Quote, I want to thank law enforcement. They've done a good job. As for law enforcement officers who wrongfully shoot people, Trump compared them to golfers who sometimes choke on the course.
They choke. Just like in a golf tournament, they miss a 3-foot.
You're not comparing it to golf because, of course, that's what the media
I'm saying people choke.
At an event in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden blamed Trump for stoking violent attacks and for failing to call on his own supporters to stop acting as an armed militia in this country.
This president long ago forfeited any moral leadership in this country. He can't stop the violence because for years he's fomented it. You know, he may believe mouthing the words law and order makes him strong. But his failure to call on his own supporters to stop acting as an armed militia in this country shows how weak he is.
Biden also condemned violence and property damage at recent protests against police shootings and racial injustice. Protests last night in Los Angeles after sheriff's deputies killed a black man, Dijon Kizzee. Deputies reportedly tried to stop Kizzee, who was riding a bike, for a violation of the vehicle code. He dropped his bike and ran. Deputies chased him. The sheriff's department said during a struggle, Kizzee punched a deputy and dropped a bundle of clothes he'd been carrying. When they spotted a handgun, deputies shot him. Protesters demonstrated outside the sheriff's department's South LA station last night and sprayed graffiti. Authorities declared an unlawful assembly shortly after midnight. No reported arrests. 20 more arrests in Portland last night after protesters marched to the condominium tower where Mayor Ted Wheeler lives. They were demanding his resignation. Police declared another riot after police broke windows, burglarized a building, and lit a fire in the ground-level store of an occupied apartment building. Firefighters quickly extinguished the blaze. On Sunday, the Oregon Justice Resource Center and other progressive groups called on Wheeler to resign. Wheeler also serves as police commissioner. Anti-racism protesters have faulted the police for their extensive use of tear gas against protesters and for arresting protesters while giving a pass to right-wing supporters of police and President Trump who have attacked demonstrators. A bill that would allow California police officers who commit serious misconduct to be permanently stripped of their badges failed in the final hours of the California state legislative session. California is one of only five states without such a provision to create a way to decertify police officers. Police unions and organizations representing police chiefs and sheriffs claim they supported the concept but opposed the details in the legislation. A federal appeals court is set to hear arguments in President Trump's latest attempt to prevent a New York prosecutor from getting his tax returns. Trump's lawyers appealed to the Second U.S. District Court of Appeals last month after a federal judge rejected their renewed efforts to invalidate a subpoena issued to his accounting firm. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. has agreed not to enforce the subpoena until after the appeals court makes a ruling. Even if Vance does get Trump's tax returns, they would be part of a confidential grand jury investigation. Trump is the only modern president who has refused to release his tax returns. Before he was elected, he had promised to do so after the IRS completed an audit. I'm Eileen Alfandary for Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We are going to first turn our attention to what is going on in Kenosha, Wisconsin. From Kenosha, Wisconsin to Portland, Oregon, right-wing protesters across the country have been sporting loaded guns at demonstrations against police killings. Donald Trump, meanwhile, has refused to criticize them and has not asked them to stand down. On Monday, August 31st, Trump openly defended Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old who reportedly murdered two people and severely injured another at a protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin on August 25th. Rittenhouse had traveled to Kenosha from nearby Illinois to confront anti-racist demonstrators and to protect businesses, he says. Earlier in the day, Kyle was captured on video having friendly interactions with police who thanked him and others for carrying weapons, and the police gave them water. In videos published by witnesses, Rittenhouse appears wielding a large semi-automatic rifle. He is also pictured with other right-wing gunmen who claim that they are defending property from what they describe as rioters. According to Kenosha County prosecutors, 36-year-old Joseph Rosenbaum, the first victim, tried to take Rittenhouse's gun from him, and Rittenhouse shot him. In one frame, Rittenhouse is seen running away from the scene of the shooting and being pursued by anti-racist protesters. The video shows him falling on his own as he runs away from them. He is then seen shooting his rifle at protesters from the ground. Rittenhouse was arrested the next day and has since been charged with five felonies and a misdemeanor. During a White House news conference, Trump claimed Rittenhouse had acted in self-defense when he fired several rounds from his semi-automatic rifle at anti-racist protesters. Trump also said Rittenhouse, quote, probably would have been killed, leading many to believe he is showing tacit approval for the deadly attack. In Kenosha, scores of people have been protesting since August 23rd, when 29-year-old black man Jacob Blake was shot seven times in the back by a white police officer. On Tuesday, September 1st, Trump is planning to visit Kenosha, which many are now speaking out against. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, for example, has asked Trump to reconsider his upcoming visit. In his letter, he added, "Your presence will only hinder our healing." Trump will meet with police and other officials, but not with the Blake family. Let's go to some short clips now about Kenosha.
We're looking at all of it. That was an interesting situation. You saw the same tape as I saw, and he was trying to get away from them, I guess, it looks like, and he fell, and then they very violently attacked him, and it was something that we're looking at right now, and it's under investigation, but I guess he was in very big trouble. He would have been, he probably would have been killed, but it's under investigation. Large numbers of people that were supporters, but that was a peaceful protest. And paint is not, and paint is a defensive mechanism. Paint is not bullets. Your supporters, and they are your supporters indeed, shot a young gentleman who, and killed him, not with paint. but with a bullet. And I think it's disgraceful.
You had to see last night in Washington, it was a disgrace. It was a disgrace that these people are representing the United States of America. It was a disgrace. Protesters, they're not protesters. Those aren't those are anarchists, they're agitators, they're rioters, they're looters. They're not, you know, you say that, and some of the people, not all of them, but some of the people back there, how dare you? These are friendly protesters, right? Friendly protesters. They're just looking for trouble. Has nothing to do with George Floyd, has nothing to do with anything. They don't even know who George Floyd is.
All righty, there you go. What I'd like to do now is to welcome our guest, who's based in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the Reverend Dr. Monica L. Cummings, Assistant Minister at Bradford Community Church, which is Unitarian Universalist. Reverend Dr. Cummings, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Margaret. Good morning to you. Good morning to your other guests, and good morning to your listeners.
Okay, so first of all, just give us a sense of what it has been like on the ground in the last few days now in Kenosha, and your response to Donald Trump's defending Kyle, who killed two people and seriously injured another, as well as his visit to Kenosha.
Well, things have been calming down. We continue to protest during the day, march through the streets of Kenosha during the day. The evenings and nights have been quiet. Artists from all over the area have come and painted a lot. Most of our downtown businesses are boarded up. Some churches are boarded up, and local residents and folks from nearby cities have come into the city and painted the boards, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Artwork. In terms of the president coming to Kenosha, as was reported, both the governor and the mayor of Kenosha have asked him to not come to Kenosha. The city is still on edge. People are still trying to process what's happened in the city. Pain, anguish, grief, fear is one of the dominant feelings that people have. We do have armed militia guarding some subdivisions here in the city. In terms of the 17-year-old who killed two people and severely wounded another, the question, Margaret, that continues to confuse me is white males have, to a significant number, have been the mass shooters, you know, whether it's schools, country music venue, or a mall, and yet they don't fit a profile. So we have the 17-year-old with a military style assault weapon walking away from an area where shots were reported as having been fired, and he's not, and he doesn't fit a profile. You know, he gets waved through by police and National Guardsmen, you know, free to go home. And that's what confuses me, that to this day, you know, folks who look like 17-year-old are not profiled and therefore get to freely carry weapons. And this could have been diffused earlier in the day. If armed militia were in Civic Park, where protesters gather, and that's where most protests leave from to walk through the streets of Kenosha, and the police didn't come over and question the guys to find out what, you know, whether or not they could legally own a firearm, I engaged them as a minister. I engaged them and talked with them just to understand, you know, why would you come to a peaceful protest with military-style assault weapons?
Now, let me ask you this, Reverend Cummings, because this isn't the first time we have seen this. I mean, going back to Michigan, where you had armed right-wing Trump supporters mm-hmm. literally going into a state house and also threatening an elected official. And Trump has not spoken out about any of this. So personally, I'm not surprised that these guys are showing up with weapons, because they figure, well, they have the blessing of the man in the highest office in the land, in the White House. And the Blake family, Blake's father, when he spoke at the March on Washington last Friday, on the anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington, spoke very forcefully and said that there are two systems of justice in Kenosha, and I would go as far as to say in other parts of the United States, one for black people and the other for white people. And I think that explains why the police didn't come over to the protesters in the park, but also the friendliness of their interaction with Kyle and other armed people, thanking them for what they were doing and offering them water, right?
Oh, I agree absolutely, and I still put the question out there: why is it, you know, that certain folks get profiled and other folks don't? You know, and I've heard Blake Sr. speak a number of times. In fact, there was a big rally here in Kenosha on Saturday, and Blake Sr. spoke and talked about the justice system and wanting justice for his son. Absolutely. And so things here in Kenosha, as you, I don't know if you can imagine or not, but once we found out that the president planned to visit, you know, things ramped up again. We have had days and nights of calm. And now, of course, our concern is that the president will come, stir the pot, and we'll be back to, you know, where we were last Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, when we had when the protests turned violent.
Well, let me ask you this, though, because it seems to me as though what is happening is that the script is getting flipped a bit, and increasingly, including in the media, we hear a lot of talk about law and order. We hear a lot of talk about rioters, about the destruction of property, and not so much about this spate of killings of black people that has been going on for decades now. I mean, we think of Trayvon Martin, a white vigilante, basically, Michael Brown, Eric Garner, and there's so many others. Yeah. So it doesn't seem to me as though the focus is on the loss of life. And the fact that what is the problem with police basically killing black and brown people, and focusing on the protection of property, that seems to be the priority, not human life.
Well, and it's changed the conversation, and put the conversation on people where there will be more sympathy. And so I'm not surprised that the conversation and the narrative is being redirected toward, like you said, the militia, who the vast majority of people who look like them will sympathize with them. Not people of, I'm not saying people of color, but it's to divert and to distract, which we all know this president is an expert at doing, you know, not mentioning COVID. I mean, every time he's talking about something else, he's not talking about COVID and 180,000 plus people who have died from it. And so I believe that distraction is the name of the game, and don't talk about, the, like, as you mentioned, the black and brown people being killed by police. Let's talk about the good Americans. And we all know when someone says American, there's a certain face that fits that narrative, and other faces not so much. And so I'm not surprised, as you said, the script is being flipped, or the narrative is being shifted away from policing, excessive force by policing, how policing needs to be reformed, and let's talk about the good old patriots who are defending the country.
Right. And Reverend Cummings, also, can you tell us a bit about the relationships between the black community and police in Kenosha, because we know it is a majority city, not a wealthy city. I think the average income about $45,000 or $50,000 or so. But I imagine that Black people are at the bottom of that in terms of economics. Yeah. But it does seem to me as though what happened and the attitude of the police in thanking Kyle and others reflects perhaps a relationship with the Black community and the kind of profiling that you referred to that began before Mr. Blake was shot. Tell us what you know about that.
Talking about economics, of course, in the state of Wisconsin and Kenosha as well, the unemployment rate for Black people is extremely high, and for Black males, it's painfully high. I was in a meeting with the mayor, and I don't know if I mentioned this last week when I was on, and there's an organization called CUSH, Congregations United to Serve Humanity. And within CUSH, there's a clergy religious leadership caucus. And we met with the mayor last month, July 20th or 29th, somewhere around that. And some of the agenda issues, in addition to Black Lives Matter, was policing here in Kenosha. And the mayor's response was that the police and the community had a good relationship. And we disagreed with him. And I shared a story about being stopped at midnight for speeding in a school zone. And I'm looking at the officer, and I said, I'm doing the speed limit. He said, no, you're not. You're in a school zone. And this is midnight. And, of course, you know, the speed zone for schools is when children are present, and there were no children present at midnight. And that's just an example. Why would I get pulled over for doing the speed limit in a school zone at midnight? And I couldn't argue with him because it was just him and me. And, you know, if one wants to walk away from those encounters, you know, we keep our hands on the steering wheel and we, you know, don't argue.
I haven't met you, but I assume you're not white, right? And that might have been a reason you were stopped.
I am not. I'm African American. I'm an African American woman with dreadlocks.
Like me.
Or at night, you know, whether or not I could be distinguished from a male with dreadlocks, I don't know. And so, no, the police and the relationship between the Black community and the police in Kenosha is not good. And like most people of color, we fear the police. We see those lights go off behind us and our heart rate goes up and our anxiety goes through the ceiling and fear sets in. And that's
right.
The problem, Margaret, when there aren't diverse voices at the table to tell the mayor, no, relationships aren't good. But if you insulate yourself and only have people who look like you at the table making decisions, then you come away with conclusions that aren't necessarily reality. You know, and there's a saying, in activism, nothing about us without us. And that, I think, will go a long way to helping to shift. So leadership here in Kenosha, which I think ought to all resign because of the incompetence that's been on display all week. But when decisions are made in isolation and absent of the people that those decisions are going to impact the most, we get what we have in a lot of our cities, including here in Kenosha.
Right. And tell us then, who knows, we'll see what happens today. And there's a lot of concern that Trump supporters and who knows, perhaps even Trump himself, who knows what is in his heart. We do know that his racism, basically, we have known about for a very, very long time, starting from his business days in real estate, where between him and his father were refusing to rent apartments to Black people, and it has continued. So Trump has not changed, but it does seem as though there is an angling for some kind of race war. We do know that there are some elements of white supremacists who perhaps were considered fringe elements before the Trump presidency that are now feeling that they're coming into mainstream. I mean, you have somebody like Ann Coulter who is saying Kyle Rittenhouse should be president. He's really being pumped up and being held as a hero by people, like-minded people around the country. I'd like your response to that, and also to tell us about any demands that are coming up from the community. And one other point, too, about this police chief in Kenosha, I read that at some point he was saying that shoplifters should be warehoused somewhere and their children taken. I mean, to me, that really reflected something about what the relationship must be between the police and the black community in Kenosha. Reverend Cummings.
Well, that was actually the sheriff. That was actually the county sheriff, Kenosha County Sheriff.
It was the sheriff. Okay.
But yeah, but I agree absolutely that that attitude is then filters down to his sheriffs. And I can share an experience that I had with one of his sheriffs standing on the front porch of my house. But in terms of the 17-year-old who murdered two people and severely wounded another, who was breaking the law. He was out after curfew, which isn't mentioned, and he's 17 and not old enough to possess such a weapon. And so to lift up someone who was breaking the law and murdered two people just is an indication of the sad state of affairs and the mentality in this country and the fear in this country. As we move closer and closer to minorities being the majority in this country, I look at what I was a Peace Corps volunteer in South Africa, and I was able to witness how once the majority black population gained political power, what happened to white Afrikaners. And I always see what's happening in the States and measure that against what happened in South Africa when the oppressed then became the majority of the population, and how the politics changed and how the society changed. I think folks who are in the majority now who have the power and the privilege are fearful that they're losing their country as brown and black people continue to move inch toward being the majority in this country, and people acting out of fear and people acting out of trauma is not a good recipe for a good outcome. And so we have a president who is condoning militias, and the veil's been dropped. They've been there, they've been, you know, hiding in the corners, they've been underground, and now they've been given a wink and a nod to come out and are being given cover, being labeled patriots, protecting their country. And what are they protecting it from?
That's right. And the other thing too, Reverend Cummings, is that Trump's comments about Kiowa, he was just defending himself and maybe he would have been killed. I mean, what is forgotten in this story is that Kyle had already shot and killed somebody, a man who actually saw the danger and threw a plastic bag at him from what we understand, and tried to perhaps, you know, get his weapon away from him, and Kyle shot and killed him. And he was being chased by protesters after he had already killed somebody. Right. So the story, as Trump tells it, isn't even accurate in that way. You know what I mean? It's and he meanwhile, he even called somebody and said, I just killed somebody, or I just shot somebody, something like that. And then he walks up to the police, and they people are yelling in the background, hey, he shot somebody, he just killed somebody, he just shot somebody. They completely ignore it, right? I'm surprised they didn't offer him some more water then. I mean, it's just an outrage. Your final thought on this.
I'm praying that the city remains calm. I am praying that the president does not stir up trouble, calling his supporters to come into town armed. And I'm praying that the police do their job. If they see people who are armed with military-style weapons, to at the very least check their ID and ensure that they're legally able to own said weapon.
at the very least. If they would have done that the other night, perhaps they would have given those guys a different message. They do have a Second Amendment right to carry a weapon. I own weapons. I don't have an issue with that. What I do have an issue with is ensuring that the law is applied to everyone equally, and to check at the very least IDs, and to apply the law yes. equally to everyone. And we want justice for Jacob. In all of this, you know, this all started with Jacob Blake being shot 7 times in the back by a police officer. And so to keep our eye on that, to get justice for Jacob.
Right. Well, on that note, the Reverend Dr. Monica L. Cummings, thank you so very much for joining us, and hope that you stay safe. We wish all good things for the people there in Kenosha, and justice, of course, for Jacob Blake and his family. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret. Bye-bye.
All righty. We are going to take a short station break, and then coming up, we'll turn our attention to Portland, Oregon, and Mike Crenshaw, based in Portland, hip-hop artist, educator, and activist, is waiting to speak with us. And then later in the hour, Greg Tate joins us about the passing of Chadwick Boseman. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Alrighty, and that pressure drop, one of my favorites there by Toots and the Maytals, and we are keeping Toots in our thoughts. He is in critical condition now in hospital, in intensive care as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Check out our website at sotrueradio.org, where we have a community calendar and lots of other stories. Our handle on Twitter and Instagram at SoTrueRadio. You can like and friend us on Facebook if you are a member there. And we are nationwide and worldwide on SoundCloud. And today we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Washington, D.C., and internationally. We'd like to give a shout-out to our SoundCloud listeners on the African nation of Niger. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Now, on Saturday, August 29th, a white man named Aaron Danielson was shot and killed following a protest in Portland, Oregon. Danielson, a 39-year-old white man, was reportedly part of the armed right-wing Patriot Prayer group, Trump supporters. Donald Trump described Danielson's death as disgraceful and called participants in that protest great patriots. The shooting took place after a right-wing caravan entitled, by the way, Trump 2020, Cruz Rally in Portland, where Trump supporters drove across the city in a caravan of cars. In one reporting, Trump supporters are seen firing paintballs and pepper spray at protesters. This led to the confrontation where Donaldson was eventually shot. There were several pickup trucks with U.S. flags, Trump 2020 flags, and stickers with pro-cop messages like Thin Blue Line. Portland police claimed they tried to stop the right-wing caravan from entering downtown, where violence ensued between protesters and those in the caravan. Police have not yet formally identified a suspect in Danielson's killing, but according to the Wall Street Journal, they're investigating a man named Michael Reno as a person of interest. On Monday, August 31st, anti-racist demonstrators continued protesting for the 95th consecutive night. By the way, protests are happening in Detroit, in L.A., in Washington, D.C., in New York, all across the country, but you wouldn't know that from looking at mainstream media. Anyhow, Protesters in Portland have been continually speaking out on the street since the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota on May 28th. Oregon Governor Kate Brown has since proposed what she called a unified law enforcement plan, which includes a community forum, and it also includes for a call for sheriffs from other parts of Portland to come in to help police the city. But the sheriffs are refusing to follow the governor's order. And presidential candidate Joe Biden has accused Trump of rooting for chaos and violence. And Trump has also announced that the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security will open a joint operation to investigate violent left-wing civil unrest. They're not going to investigate the rise of racist attacks or violent white supremacists, but they're going to look for what they're calling, quote-unquote, left-wing civil unrest. Let us go now to a series of clips of Trump speaking out on a number of fronts. Let's go to those clips now.
Portland is a disaster. It's been a disaster for many, many years. Brave federal law enforcement officers single-handedly, the officers, they single-handedly saved the federal courthouse in Portland from lawless rioters and agitators and anarchists. That's what they are. You know, when you find Molotov cocktails in somebody's knapsack and they say, no, I'm just here to have a good time. These are really sick, disturbed people. The radical left's agenda in action. Portland is their roadmap for America. If the radical left gets in and they treat Joe Biden as a puppet, he's merely a puppet. But if the radical left gets in, they look at Portland as a thing that they want. That's what they want. Why? Who knows? Doesn't matter. It's a different thinking, but it's a mess. A situation where things are going on as they are today, we must never allow mob rule. We can never allow mob rule. In the strongest possible terms, the Republican Party condemns the rioting, looting, arson, and violence we have seen in Democrat-run cities all, like Kenosha, Minneapolis, Portland, Chicago, and New York, and many others, Democrat-run.
All righty. So there is Trump going on as in his usual style. I would now like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth Mike Crenshaw, born and raised in Chicago and Minneapolis, currently a resident of Portland, Oregon. He is an independent hip-hop artist, respected MC, poet, educator, and activist. And Crenshaw is the lead U.S. organizer for the African hip-hop caravan and uses cultural activism as a means to develop international solidarity related to human rights and justice through hip-hop and popular education. Mike is the Northwest Regional Director of the Hip-Hop Congress. Mike Crenshaw, welcome back.
Thank you, Margaret. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. The question is, how are you? I mean, you know, you feel, as I'm sure you, like so many other Black people, we feel like sitting ducks right now. I mean, you know, every time I leave my house or my daughter has to leave her house or any of my family members, you don't know what is going to happen. Just describe for our listeners a bit what it is like right now being Black living in Portland, Oregon.
Being Black and living in Portland, I think it must feel like being Black and living in the United States right now. We just heard some clips of the president talking about mob rule and how we can't have mob rule. Well, Sunday afternoon, I was running errands in the city, and I was surprised, not really shocked, but I was surprised to see a caravan of hundreds upon hundreds of vehicles, pickup trucks, cars, even semi trucks, with Trump flags, American flags, thin blue line flags, All Lives Matter flags, even some Confederate flags. And this went on for hours. You know, they blocked major thoroughfares. They caused a lot of congestion. They headed into downtown. They were armed. They used their paintball guns and their pepper spray and bear spray and mace to assault people as they drove through the city, anybody that was out there as a counter protester. So when I saw that caravan passing through the city, it triggered me to think about a lynch mob, and not a lynch mob of dozens of people, but a lynch mob of thousands, really. You know, if you have a few hundred vehicles full of people, you know, you might, there might have well been a couple of thousand of those people. They're there to harass and intimidate and provoke, and insinuate white supremacy. And it's very clear. It's also very clear that they have the protection of the police. So being a black person in this environment, it's not a safe environment. We have to be hypervigilant.
Yeah, and you know, and in fact, fomenting terror, because we all know the history and legacy of terror against black people, against indigenous people in this country, and Oregon having that history of being a white state. So to see these people, it basically was a Trump a caravan that was a Trump rally. I mean, if you look at the title of it, but also the Trump 2020 cruise rally in Portland. Also, it's emerging, something that we have always known, of white supremacists and militias infiltrating police departments, but not only police departments, but also the military. And I would just like to get your response to that, and also of Trump now saying that they're setting up this Department of Justice and Department of Homeland Security, a joint operation center to investigate violent left-wing civil unrest. And the fact that Trump is trying to use the outrage and grief by protesters in Oregon to make his case for law and order as a reason why he should be reelected. Your thoughts on all this, Mike?
You know, this is a very problematic reality that's part of history in this country as well as the current reality. The reports that we see from time to time that say that the Department of Justice or the FBI has discovered that there are links between organized white supremacy and the military, or organized white supremacy and local police departments, it's overstating the obvious. It's almost funny, but it's not funny in a humorous way. It's funny in a peculiar and ironic way that they would even waste the ink in reporting that as if it's news to anybody. I think black folks have always known that there are two hands. There's the left hand, which is the armed militias and the organized hate groups, the criminal elements that operate on behalf of racial terror in our society, that are out here in the street getting away with murder of black people and of people of color. And then there's always been the state side, okay? The other hand that operates under the protection of the law, under the protection of local, state, and federal government. The two often come together when there's a white power demonstration, okay? When the neo-fascist, the neo-Nazi, the Klan, the white power elements want to march and intimidate and flex their ability to cause terror in the populace, then they're often protected by law enforcement, okay? And so there's long been membership in racist organizations that have been part of the police departments. okay, and the intelligence agencies. And that is probably linked to the consistent murder of black people and people of color by police departments that go unsolved, that go unchecked. There's never any recourse. There's often no justice. There's no reconciliation for us. And so we've just had to accept that the loss of our lives at the hands of these individuals and organizations is part of life in America.
Yeah.
And it's not new.
That's right, absolutely. And we are going to have to leave it there, Mike, but we are going to have you back. We hope that you stay safe. We do know that the roots of policing in the United States were from slave catchers, and you almost feel that way, Mike. You almost feel like we are back to
right.
that. So
we're back to it.
Stay safe, and we'll talk again very soon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret.
All righty. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth Now. I and many of his fans were shocked at the death of Chadwick Boseman, whose death at 43 years old shocked his fans and those who worked with him. Before we welcome our guest, let us hear what ABC had to say about the life and legacy of Chadwick Boseman.
Now to the passing of a young icon, Chadwick Boseman, the actor, lost to cancer at just 43 years old. Tonight, the tributes continue, including from some of his youngest fans who found their superhero in him. Here's ABC's Janae Norman.
Tonight, paying tribute to a king. So many grieving the loss of actor Chadwick Boseman.
Wakanda forever!
Best known for bringing Black Panther to life and for the first time giving millions of kids a superhero who look like them. His youngest fans honoring their King T'Challa, a superhero on screen and role model in real life.
They're superheroes who want to be a superhero.
Well,
so.
I mean, it's not all about being a superhero. It's also about being a good person, and that's why Black Panther my favorite.
The announcement of Boseman's death, detailing his quiet battle with colon cancer, liked more than 7 million times. Now the most liked tweet ever. Black Panther director Ryan Coogler writing tonight, even he was in the dark. I realized that he was living with his illness the entire time I knew him. Because he was a caretaker, a leader, and a man of faith, dignity, and pride, he shielded his collaborators from his suffering. Students at Howard University, Boseman's alma mater, holding a moment of silence. The school's president calling Boseman a deep thinker who had a deep passion for writing and uplifting his people. And he did just that in this 2018 commencement speech.
I don't know what your future is, but if you are willing to take the harder way, the more complicated one, the one with more failures at first than successes, the one that has ultimately proven to have more meaning, more victory, more glory, then you will not regret it.
One tribute touching on the timing of Boseman's death was from actor-producer Issa Rae, saying she didn't know why this one hurt so badly, writing, maybe it's because his grace, class, and kindness was so rare, or maybe it's because we didn't need to see another black man's life cut short. Tom?
Janae Norman for us tonight. Janae, thank you.
All righty. What I'd like to do now is to welcome our guest, Greg Tate, writer, musician, cultural provocateur, lives in Harlem, Sugar Hill, and he has written a number of books, including Everything But the Burden, What White People Are Taking from Black Culture, Midnight Lightning, Jimi Hendrix and the Black Experience, The Greg Tate Reader, put out by University Press, and also he has taught a course called A Brief History of Woke Black Music, and he's now working on Beast Mode, Iconic Gods and Monsters of the Bloodthirsty Black Atlantic and Beyond. That's going to be published this year, 2020. Greg Tate, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here, even under this
Greg Tate, with everything going on in the world, we were just talking about Kenosha, we were just talking about Portland, and you just feel like, as black people, we're just under attack all around, so many people dying, and then on top of it, to lose the man that, you know, so many of us remember, Wakanda, and you heard the small boy in that clip, clearly that character being a hero. Tell us the significance of Chadwick Boseman, of his work and what is bound to be his legacy?
Well, I mean, I think that emotionally, this is a time when, as human beings, as black folks in this country, I mean, we can be drawn towards fatalism and feel like there's even more of a target on all of us than even history and our own experience has led us to believe. And I think some of the importance of that brother is that he chose to play voice, you know. He chose to play people who use every spiritual, emotional, intellectual resource they had to combat, you know, the violence that's daily assaulting black folks, and that's systemic, you know, because he was really somebody that also, you know, these characters that he embodied, you know, these people, these icons that he embodied. You know, Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, you know, and in the mythological way, Black Panther. These were people who set themselves up against the full institutional systemic weight of white supremacy, you know. And, you know, you kind of lead with your convictions, you know, with your confidence, you know, with your presence, you know, in playing these roles. But he also brought this complexity of humanity, you know, this depth to these characters as well. He didn't allow you to just see them as people who were, you know, just stoic samurai fighters out there. He allowed you to really see that these were people who were vulnerable, that had a range of feelings inside of these combative situations, you know, that they had doubts, they had anxiety, that they needed the support of other people, you know, that they understood that you can't go into these kinds of battles alone, you know. And I mean, you know, for an actor to convey all of that, they got to have craft, you know what I mean? They got to really do the hard work, you know what I mean? So when we see that brother up on the screen in those roles, you know, we also feel the preparation, you know, the readiness to embody. I mean, these characters that are, they're heroic to us in our history books, but they, you know, they were human beings too, and they had to overcome a lot of just inner kind of challenges, you know, to stand up.
Yeah.
For the, you know, for us in the way that they did. And it's like, you know, you have to be a virtuoso as an actor. You have to be as much a virtuoso as a Dizzy Gillespie or a Louis Armstrong. You know, you've got to be able to hit all the notes, but then you got to give us the emotion behind all those notes as well, you know. And like, you know, in looking at his performances, you know, you just see that, man. You know, it's like, you know, they say the great acting is really done with the eyes. You know what I mean? And so you can see in a lot of these parts, he didn't necessarily have a lot of speeches or, you know, a lot of, like, you know, clever, pithy dialogue. Like, he had to really convey what he was feeling in these moments, these challenged, combative moments, you know, with his eyes, you know. And he gave you you know, just such a sweep of emotionalism, you know, in playing all of these characters, you know. So it's a deep, it's interesting when you think about, you know, just a deep enduring legacy that that, you know, was committed, you know, to film with a handful of films, you know, like. We were only beginning to see, you know, what this brother was going to be able to deliver, you know, to the art form and to the people. You know, I mean, it's like you have to imagine
what would it be like if we had lost a Coltrane or a Hendrix? Well, Hendrix we did lose, you know what I mean? But when you think about somebody like a Miles Davis or a Prince that had these long careers where they were able to give us just so many facets and so many masterpieces, you know what I mean? Because they were just operating at that level where every time they took it, you know, to the stage, you know, like something great was going to happen. It might not have, you know, and the measure was like not other people's greatness, but their own. He was really operating, I feel, on that level, with that level of potentiality, you know.
Absolutely. You have broken it down so beautifully for us. We've got about 15 seconds left, I'm afraid. Carry on, Greg.
Watch Reggie Hudlin's Marshall. You know, watch Brian Hegelin's 42 in terms of directors. You know, just go look at those performances again. You know what I mean? Because I think the first time you look at him, you're thinking about, you can't not think about the people he's playing. You know what I mean? It's them being real life, flesh and blood people. But now we can go
absolutely
back and we can really look at how he embodied that, you know?
Right. Well, Greg Tate, absolutely the case. It just so happens the day before he died, I saw him play James Brown, and I told my family then, this is just amazing what he was able to do. So we appreciate you coming in, lifting him up and helping to memorialize this great actor and human being, Chadwick Boseman. Thank you so much, Greg Tate.
Thank you for the opportunity, the platform. Peace.
Sure. We're out of time. I got a dash. I'd like to, today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. Thank our audio engineer, Lizette Tapia, our assistant producer, Romero Funes. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, and y'all, please stay safe.
Go down that road again. It's all the same.
You're tuned in to listener supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Tumbleweed Virtual Music Festival on Thursday, September 3rd at 3 p.m., streaming online.